We will have music on the show, that is on the theme of werewolves and such. In fact, we decided to even go one step further, and I got this information in front of me here, on, I got to lean a little bit closer, I'm not that good at reading somebody's tiny handwriting. Oh, let's see, next Monday night, the 27th, is Screaming Horror, and we're doing a werewolves versus vampire theme show, so that's going to be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to playing music that has those themes to it, so hopefully we have enough to cover a full two-hour show, so we'll have to hope. Tonight's show probably will top out about 90 minutes. That's because the Baron has a meeting later tonight, and I can't really afford to miss it. So I don't think we'll make a full two-hour show, and I just dropped some stuff. Let me pick that up now because that's kind of important. There we go. I have a big desk, and I still drop stuff off of it. What can I say? At least I'm not dropping knives on top of myself. So anyway, our big thing is, of course, werewolf movies. Now, look, everybody's got their favorite, okay? And let's face it, we could probably name real quick, and I'm going to try to do this. We've got The Howling from, what, 1981? The American Werewolf in London from 81. Wolfen, I think, also came out in 81, if I'm not mistaken. Dog Soldiers, which was 2002. And, oh, let's just pick one other one, because, you got to pick the ginger snap ones out there. Just to name a few. I mean, Company of Werewolves is another one. What else can we pick? The Wolfman from 1941. Probably really got the whole thing going with that. So, yeah, there's a lot of great ones out there. We're also going to be discussing some of the worst werewolf movies. You know I have to do that. That's just what I have to do in life. And we're going to also name a couple of really cool horror novels out there that are also on the werewolf theme. Now, let's take a step back here and understand something. This is really strange, which happened to the werewolf culture in both, really more in novels. That's where I'm going to start. In novels, I don't know how to explain it. Lately, werewolf stories have become romance novels. Seriously, the beast, the artwork on the covers is very much geared to, practically the, I want to say, women readers. Not all, let's face it, there are men who do read them too, but that there has been this kind of avalanche towards this. And it's really different, because if you think back, maybe with the 70s, you still had that gothic romance going in the 70s in a lot of books. If you think about Dark Shadows and such, that had that theme running through it. So that kind of changed over in about the 80s, and the werewolf horror got a bit more grisly. And now it's turned again and gone back to a more romance-like side. So I don't know a lot about the romance side, obviously, but I have one of my, I don't want to say minions anymore. They don't seem to like that word as much. Let's just call them my demons from hell, my bitches from another universe. I mean, it depends what's going on here. Is how you want to describe some of the people who hang out at my house and help me out with different projects. So someone here gave me a list, and just to kind of go down a list, one of the big kind of writers into the werewolf romance, if you would, a couple of them would be Kelly Armstrong, or Patricia Briggs. They have been writing a series of books. One from Kelly Armstrong is called Bitten, The Women of the Other World, book number one. Now, again, don't call in, ask me a lot of these questions. The person who gave me this information is not here right now, so I can't answer for them. I just can go with the list they gave me. And I mean, it's a really long list. These two authors alone have been, you know, clawing it out amongst themselves on these werewolf novels. Most recently, it's been a Jennifer Lynn Barnes, who released a novel called Raised by Wolves, book number one. And again, when I say that, Women of the Underworld, here's another book, just noting it here, I guess, how it sorted itself, Frostbitten, book number 10. So obviously there's been a really big demand. This has not been something that someone just said, well, you know, I'll write a book on it and let it go. It has been really obviously going for quite a while. And I just, you know, I look down this list and I'm like, this is a, I never really realized how many romance werewolf novels there were. I mean, the list here is incredible, and it kind of, you know, really points to something. Now, of course, everybody does know about Gary Brandner's book, came out in 77, The Howling. Trying to find a good actual copy of the book with the original artwork on the cover is very, very, very difficult. Okay? Even I don't have that copy yet. Now, to find that, you really gotta be willing to spend a few bucks on it. It's not cheap. A book on Halloween is probably more money. It's about $400 for a book about the original storyline and everything like that. That book costs is out of print, like $400 damn. So you definitely have that. Of course, Stephen King's in this one too. Another one that I wouldn't know, and I do have this book, is Robert R. Period McCammon. He did the book The Wolf's Hour, another very good book. I do recommend that one highly if you're looking for your true horror, getting back to that kind of aspect, away from the romance kind of aspect. Not criticizing romance, but again, you know, trying to fall back into the understanding of it. I mean, there's been a lot of books such as High Moor, because of the Moors, echoing back to the American Werewolf in London. So, you know, Stay Off the Moors. That came out from, let me see here if I can find his name. I really don't know how to say it. It's G-R-A-E-M-E Reynolds. That's another one you may want to check out for yourselves. J period L period B net for Wolf Hunter. Another good one you guys maybe want to check out. I'm just giving you a couple of things here because, yes, while we talk about cinema on this show, we also talk about all parts of horror genres. There have been tons of horror comics. Oh, I can't begin to tell you how many horror comics there are, and we can't even get into it. The topic is too massive for one show. But there's a lot of horror comics out there that you definitely want to check out if you're totally into the horror, what do you call it? Into understanding everything of horror. If you like your horror genre, then you really, let's be honest, you got to really, you know, watch the movies, listen to the soundtracks, you got to read the comics, you got to do it all. It is, you know, I like to put it all encompassing. So there's our couple. Oh, just got handed here a little list. So I did say, don't forget to mention Werewolf by Night comics. Well, that is true. There are some really great comics out there, of course. You know, you just really got to look around for them. They're not that easy to find all the time. They don't always have the term werewolf. But Werewolf by Night has been a common one that has been used, the title, a lot. So you can definitely find a lot of different versions of that one. Another one is known as Werewolf. That came out from Dale Comics, so you should definitely check that out. There's some that are not that great, I mean, I'll be honest. But it is an interesting aspect. If you want to go from the literary world into the cinematic world, that's great, because that's where we're heading right now. Now, let me just go back here. Okay. Now, again, this is not in any order. None. Zero. Zilch. So we're going to start with American Werewolf in London. Now, this is a British-American horror comedy film, for those who don't know. It was directed and written by John Landis, starring David Naughton, Jenny, and I don't want to screw some of these names up, Jenny Agutter, and Griffin oh God, this is going to be good. Dune, I'm going with. Basically, we have two American students who are attacked by a werewolf while backpacking holiday in London. Film was released by Universal Pictures on August 21st in 1981. Now, what makes that so interesting is if you were to go back 40 years, you're talking about 1941 when they released the werewolf. The Wolfman. And, you know, you think about that. That's kind of interesting. Now, it's also, again, the same year that you did have the Howling and the Wolfman. So there was a lot of wolfing out going there. I mean, a lot of people were getting their fix on. This film had commercial success. It won some awards from the Saturn Award for Best Horror Film to the Academy Award for Best Makeup. It's kind of a cult classic now. It's got a lot of interesting aspects to it. It did spawn off a sequel called The American Werewolf in Paris. Not a good movie, let's face that. And I believe there's a remake of this film being worked on at some point. There's been a lot of rumors, stop, starts, everything else. Let's see here if we have anything here. I know that they were trying, yes, here we go. It was announced in, 2009, it was announced that Dimension Films, wow, this is being old here, was working with the producers of the Furst Brothers, that's F-U-R-S-T, on a remake of the film. It was delayed. Then in 2016, several reports that Max Landis, the son of the John Landis, was considering remaking the film. Then in 2016, in November, you had Max saying, yes, I'm going to be writing that and doing a remake. And then in December of 2017, it's confirmed that Max has, via Twitter, of course, completed the first draft of the script. So it could be another 2-3 years to when we ever find out what's going to happen with this. I personally hope they don't do a reboot of it, but I know they're going to. And let's face it, they do a reboot of everything nowadays. And of course, you know, when they do that, my thing also, it goes back to another aspect here. Your father made the movie that got all this acclaim, and you want to remake your father's movie. First of all, your father's movie got some, you know, had a really, you know, great thing. It's a 7.6 kind of star rating to this film. This is a very good movie. I worry on this aspect for Max. Number one, you're going to try to improve upon your father's movie. This could come out very, very bad. You could hope for the best going father like son, but there will be so many comparisons. You're talking about two different types of errors in society. You're talking about from the 80s, and then you're trying to make one now. So I worry about that. I worry about that you're trying to cash in on your father's name and reputation. It's kind of obvious what you're doing there a little bit. I look at the aspects of, again, what happens if it doesn't live up to the hype? I mean, what? You try to copy off of this. Why? These are problems I personally have. I don't know about you, the audience, but I have a problem with that. Oh, and by the way, before we get a phone call from anybody special out there, I do want to know, we will not be discussing Twilight. No Twilight on the show. Sorry. No. No, 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 no. And one more time. No. So... No, we're not. Twilight is not on the list. So just keep that for the twilight of your years. It is not going to be on this list. But this film, I did like it very much. It had a lot of input into the genre. I thoroughly enjoyed so many aspects of the film itself that I thought it just... It did a lot. I love Jack the Ghost in the film. This is going to sound really bad, but the film gave a little bit of a hint to the B movie, if you would. And anyway, this B movie has been kind of where the Nazi werewolves, if you remember in the film, that I was just like floored by that. And of course, you know, that has been a really cool thing to have out there. Now, of course, I should mention that the bar that the two American students go to, called the Slaughter Lamb, is actually a real location that you can go visit. I know you're saying, wait a minute, what? Wait, what are you talking about? As far as I know, it's still open to this day. They are open every day of the year. If it is still true, the Slaughter Lamb, I believe, is found in Greenwich Village, New York City. It is known as the Slaughter Lamb Pub. It's a really interesting place. I think there's just one major location of it. So there's a lot of things that go on there. There's the Werewolf Lounge. There's a game room in the dungeon. There's a lot of things that about this place. Now, whether it's still in business, I don't know. The last thing I could find about it was from 2012. So it probably went out of business, knowing everybody's luck out there. There's a lot of mixed information on the net about it, whether it still does exist or does not exist. So somebody just said, let me put it out there. I can't tell you whether it is there or not. I'm trying to look it up right now for everybody, but I think it might still be open. It might. It's just something for, you know, you all to check out. Again, I just wanted to throw it out there because somebody wrote it down that, hey, you should mention the Slaughter Lamb Pub. And, that's something for you guys definitely to check out. It is an interesting thing that someone decided to do. You got to give it up for a place going full gusto with its themes. So definitely, if you get a chance, you should check that out. But yes, I've always enjoyed the movie itself. The makeup work on the film is really, really good, really spot on. About 97-minute film. The budget was $5.8 million for this. The box office at that time brought in $62 million. So it easily got its groove on and then some. The music pretty much consists of everything referred to moons and such like that. You've got Bad Moon Rising. You got a doo-wop version of Blue Moon. You've got Van Morrison's famous song, Moondance. There were tons for this. A very good film. I would definitely recommend, if you have not seen American Werewolf, you should see the movie. You should have it in your collection. It is required. All right. Let's talk about The Howling. Now, The Howling is an interesting movie, to say the least. I would recommend watching that movie. Now, as for the franchise, oh, Lord, where do we go? Let's first talk about the movie, shall we? I had the pleasure this past March to meet Mick Garris, who we will be playing a Q&A of Mick Garris on our Friday night show, so definitely tune in for that. It's a Q&A done from Chris Stiles at the New Jersey Horror Con and Film Festival. Now, what makes it so interesting for that, Mick Garris had a very minor little part at the end of that film in the credits going up, and I had him sign the Howling LP, which I believe came out from Waxwork Records, which was really cool, by the way. So definitely, if you get a chance, you should definitely listen to that album. Eventually, I will review it and have it out there, but it's on the stack of other things you got to get reviewed first. A massive stack. Okay, so with The Howling, we want to know here again, it's from 1981. This one's from Joe Dante. It, of course, has Dee Wallace in it, Patrick McNee, Dennis Dugan. It also includes, of course, a little a great little character role that Dick Miller did in there, in this bookstore that, if this bookstore was real in New Jersey, I would have bought most of it out by now. It was really great. I liked the store. I liked how they put all that in there just for Dick Miller. I also enjoyed the entire film itself. It was another great one. And this film won, while still in development, Best Horror Film in 1980 for the Saturn Award, which is kind of incredible if you think about it. This has also generated a great cult following to the movie. And, of course, this was also really good for Dante because it prompted the studio of Warner Brothers to bring him on to do Gremlins, which, of course, then also had a really great following and still does to this day. What's always interesting about The Howling is there has never been a lot of merchandise available on the film. It's really weird. It just hasn't happened. I really don't know why that is. We don't have a lot of just any really of the werewolves. There's not been a lot pushed out there on that aspect, and I always found that to be a great detriment to everything. A lot of people have made their own kind of, who are very crafty and such, made their own statues and different things of the Howling, but there's never really been a lot in that merchandise angle for it. What has been of interest for a lot of people is that what you have for this film is just a lot of people who enjoy the movie. It's a well-crafted film. I'm trying to find out one piece of information for you really quick here. Somebody is noting me some information, so I'm trying to get it for them. But the film itself, I think, is classically done. I mean, look, the film starts off with a guy who likes smiley faces, and he puts them up so he can know where he's been to kill. So we're trying to, try to understand that. So I'm like, okay, all right. The reporter for the film is, how should I put this? The reporter for the film, it has to meet him in an adult booth at a location, and this is all being put together. And this is really quite bizarre, if you would. Now, the reason I was bringing up something is that I have a friend of mine who he collects interesting aspects for horror films. He really does. He collects, as I collect a lot of the spear guns, knives, and things of the films, he lives in a different state, which has a little bit lesser of the gun control laws. And where he is, he buys a lot of the rifles that are used in horror films. So one of them that he wanted me to mention, I forgot to pull this email up, which I now have done, he stated that he recently had purchased a Parker Hale 1200 rifle. This is the rifle that basically Chris, the character here in the film, searches Dr. Wagner's office while he's armed with this rifle. It is a kind of a bolt-action rifle. I don't know a lot about rifles, so forgive me. It's basically 30-06. It is a kind of sniper rifle, if you would, if you give it the scope. Now, he told me that the rifle itself cost him over $600 to get a rifle exactly like the inlay on this one. It's got a nice carving to it and such. The scope cost him another $300. So he bought a rifle identical to the one that's used in the movie for basically $1,000. And I'm thinking, are you nuts? But then again, he says the same thing to me for all the horror I get. He's also looking for different types of rifles from the movie, as he's informed me. It's hard to find them. A lot of them are no longer available, so it's more difficult. But I thought it was interesting that he has this rifle. And I said, that's very different. I'm like, okay, that's not normal. But then he goes, yeah, but you collect knives and spear guns that are used from what? And he pointed out, so, oh, that's spear gun. That one's from the same mic and model they used in Friday the 13th, part 3. So, yes, I can see his point on that. But, anyway, The Howling is a great movie, a fantastic book. Everything about this film really, to me, works. It doesn't ever take itself too seriously. You know, it's got the sleazy porno theater to it. It's got, let's face it, it's got Marsha Quince, who, let me just say it this way. That character, she plays a sultuous nymphomaniac. And, you know, let's face it, for her, that was actually, the character was Marsha Quince. Her brother was Eddie Quince, if you remember this well, played by Robert, I want to say Picardo, and Marsha was played by Elizabeth Brooks. You had Sam Pickens in this movie, John Carradine, Kevin McCarthy was in this movie. Of course, again, Dee Wallace, Christopher Stone, of course, and this one always felt early in the film. We have this older cop in the movie. It's Kenneth Toby. I mean, he was in the Thing from Another World. It Came from Beneath the Sea. I mean, he was in a lot of interesting films, to say the least. Now, I do want to note that Elizabeth Brooks, she passed away in 1997 due to brain cancer. Damn, that cancer gets everybody, it seems. She had a lot of, very varied kind of career, if you would. She succumbed to cancer after a 3-year struggle. But, like I said, she was fantastic in the role. She really got a lot of attention for a lot of reasons in that movie. But, once again, we don't have really any type of memorabilia on this film. It's like this world just forgot about these movies in a way. It's, and it's strange why that happened. I really don't know. Really what we have for these films is the poster, which is very hard to find and get. I had an opportunity one time to get that poster for, believe it or not, $40. But something happened in life and boom, couldn't get it. There have been the press books have been really hard to get on this film. Lobby cards, movie stills are somewhat available still. But yes, these movies that I'm mentioning, the background for them, the pieces to really remember them by, very difficult. Like I said, all we have here for The Howling is the soundtrack that's been made available. And that's about it. The book, very hard to find. The movie, yes, it's easy to find. But anything else extraneous for these two movies I just mentioned is very much near impossible. I do want to mention this, and it may sound very strange to mention this, but the transformation scene that occurs in the film between Marsha and Bill is erotic, yes, but then it turns into this almost animation aspect to it, which is kind of interesting. So we have both a special effects design going on and then a little bit of an animation to it, which I thought was also very interesting. It's a really good movie. You should definitely check it out if you haven't by now. It's got a semi-humorous level to it. There are a lot of interesting aspects to the movie, of course. There's multiple different aspects of differentiality between the book and the film. So if you're looking for something to go directly off of it, no, this is not going to be that. Oh, and let me tell you, you can have a drinking game with this movie because of all the werewolf type of references it makes to all types of previous horror films. If you thought Scream was something, forget that. Check out this movie. You can play all kinds of drinking games with this one because there's just so many different connections to the werewolf subculture that it's quite unbelievable. Now, let's see where we are on time. Well, we've got a good amount of time left. Okay, let's now get into the Howling franchise. All right, let me get a little drink here, because this is going to be nuts. Okay, here we go. So, this is probably one of the most well-known franchises for in werewolf movies. So, the werewolf, the Howling books, if you are a true collector, Gary Bradner's book, and that's Gary, B-R-A-N-D-N-E-R. Now, there are multiple covers of this book. I know people, personally, who have bought all the different covers, basically all the different books, of his with the different covers. That's dedication. So basically, the series includes three novels and eight films. The series began in 77 with Gary's book. In 81, it was adapted into the film of the same name and, again, directed by Joe Dante. Now, the novels we have that are available is The Howling 2, and The Howling 3 called Echoes. Got that so far? Good. Because the books are completely off the... the movies are completely off there. So there you go. Now, the if I'm not mistaken, yes, the writer, he passed away in 2013. He died of a form of cancer. I can't even figure out how to say the word. I'm thinking something maybe with throat cancer, if I understand a little here. So if that's that, again, another person connected here died of cancer. Okay, so again, the Howling 2 book is published in 79. It also went under other titles such as The Howling 2, The Return, Return of the Howling. Of course, it had a very kind of big impact, if you would, to the because everything was really swirling around with these films. Then in The Howling 3, Echoes, also known as just The Howling 3, it was published in 1985. Again, a lot of going on with this. It started to wane a little bit, but again, it is the last installment of the trilogy. So to him, the author was, it was a three-book trilogy. Now, for the films, here's where things go weird. So I'm just going to name you the films, and then we'll start getting into this a little bit deeper, okay? We have The Howling in 81. Then Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf. Okay. That came out in 85. Then The Howling 3, Marsupilus, in 87. Then Howling 4, The Original Nightmare, in 88. The Howling 5, The Rebirth, in 89. The Howling 6, The Freaks, in 91. The Howling New Moon Rising, in 95. And then most recently was The Howling Reborn, in 2011. Wow, I mean, that starts making you wonder, where were they going? It is probably one of the weirdest kind of franchises out there. I disagree. I would say it's the weirdest. I can think of the weirdest. I really can. It's either going to be the Amityville movies or witchcraft. Either one would go up for the weirdest franchise you got. Some of the worst movies in this series, of course, The Howling, New Moon Rising, the original Nightmare one, that was part four, wasn't too good. Howling 3 and Howling 6, also pretty bad. The reason Howling 2 gets to stay up in the list as far as it does is because it stars Christopher Lee in it. I really wonder what the hell he was thinking when he did that movie. And in fact, I kind of do know. So let's get a little bit more into first. Let me see if I have my information right up here. Do I? I'm looking. No. The Howling 2, which again stars Christopher Lee, Christopher Lee was looking to start to make a mark in Hollywood, if you would. He had been doing a lot of films, as you call it, across the pond, you know, over in the UK and Europe and such, and he was looking to get into something, anything, and this wasn't anything. And yes, he's got some very silly moments in the film, but he still plays it straight, which is incredible. He still has that way he carries himself through all his films, an aristocratic type of way, a way that he knew, and again, stage acting, yes, but even in his background, which also helped him, he knew how to enter a room and take control of it. And people don't always seem to understand that aspect. What do you mean, enter a room and take control? Not physically, but just by the mere presence to enter a room and be able to stand in one spot, not really doing much to attract attention to yourself, but just able to do that. And Al Pacino can do it, De Niro, you go back, Vincent Price could do it, Bela Lugosi was able to do it, Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing. They had this ability to enter a room. Yes, look, their reputations helped them, of course, but they could just enter. They didn't need to be announced. And with Christopher Lee, I mean, his background, if you ever really research this gentleman, I mean, he was British intelligence. He chased down and found Nazi war criminals. So when people would say to him that, wow, you're able to, you know, portray all this, you know, these evil characters in horror and all these gruesome scenes, you have to understand he saw gruesome scenes. Again, I told you what he did. He chased down Nazi war crimes. Okay, you know, so he saw horrendous photos of real life, and you're asking him to look at a made-up fake dummy on a set? I don't think he ever really had a problem. Incredible accomplishments that he had. It is sad that the Oscars pan horror. I don't know why. Then again, they pan comedy, too. They pan the stunt people. They don't give them any credit. You know, it gets kind of interesting, you know, really. When we say the Academy Awards, I think we're saying pompous circumstances over here. We're not really getting into the guts. Of course, this movie also stars the incredible Civil Danny, which, let's face it, she makes a very revealing scene. I think every teenage boy at that time was standing at attention in a new direction. I mean, it's just, hello. It is a silly movie, yes. The title of the film alone is a real send-up for B-movies. Your sister is a werewolf. I mean, you know, that really takes it right there, it does. And saying that is just, you know, a bit odd, if you would. But anyway, the franchise, like I said, it goes off the tracks. It never really, I don't know, something really bad happens to the movie, especially in part three. I mean, part three, whew, basically just seemed to start making up its own history, if you would. It's... You know, story kind of set in Australia. It's kind of weird, if you would, at that point. Yeah, it's just, I don't know how to explain the movie. It's one of those that you just got to watch and go, what the hell are they doing? Part four, I think the only thing I like about part four might be some of the setting for it. You're out in Budapest now. You're in a 15th century Hungarian castle. From what I understand, they used a lot of that actual, you know, kind of building. Not all of it. Not of it's, you know, obviously done up a different way. But you got a lot of stereotypical type of characters here. We got the freelance photographer. You've got a journalist, a tennis pro, two actresses, a songwriter, a historian, a doctor, a playboy. I mean, basically, you get everybody you can think of. So you've got your jock, which is tennis pro. You know, historian, the nerd, the doctor. I mean, it's just, let's put everybody in the movie, shall we? It is pretty much really, really bad. They try to incorporate a few different aspects into this. I can see they're trying to go with The Beast Must Die from, like, 74. It's trying to be, I don't know, harnessed into this. But you missed it by 9 miles. The Howling, The New Moon Rising has probably the worst transformation of a werewolf on screen, I think, maybe ever. I know that's really going out there. There might be a few others, but this one, I'm telling you, this one is really, really, really bad. The director for it was Clive Turner. And let me just put it this way. This guy became the writer, the producer, the director, the lead actor, the supervising editor, and maybe a few other things on this movie. Really loose kind of continuity going on in the movie. And again, this is where it just starts falling apart. And then we start doing some reboots, and then the franchise is just what it is. It is sad that it has happened, but that is where we stand. Now, so we get ready for our next one here. I'm going to play some music here from the band who has since split up, Prower, but still have permission to play it. The track is I Am Wolf. When you hear this one, you will know what film we're going to discuss next.
Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolf bane looms and the autumn moon is bright.
Okay, so it's kind of obvious what our next one was going to be, The Wolfman from 1941. I really do like this film so very much. I would have to say this is probably my my favorite werewolf movie. Like I said, I do like the ones from the 80s, yes. But there's something about this movie. There's something that captures this one particularly well for me, probably because it's like one of the first. It was written by Kurt Sodomak. That's S-I-O-D-M-A-K. And really, the entire premise of the legend that is read or stated in the film comes from Kurt. He basically makes it all up. And you really think about that. And all that kind of folklore, there's a lot to it, yes. But he really develops it all into this phenomenal movie. It really is. And I would have to say that this movie is probably the closest you get to a lot of memorabilia. Of course, it's a Universal Monsters movie, yes. At one time, back in, wow, I want to go back maybe to the 80s, could be a movie after that, I'm not really sure. CVS put out this, I want to say stuffed figurines. I guess that's the best way. It's not maybe the correct word, but they had the Phantom of the Opera, they had the Mummy, Dracula, and so forth. And one of them they had out was none other than The Wolfman, which I do have. I actually have the entire collection of them. And they are really, really cool, that they have. I actually got them at, believe it or not, New Jersey Horror Con 1 year. I remember seeing a vendor bringing them in. I saw the bag when he was unloading. I was like, oh, wow, look at this. And, he wouldn't sell them to me before the show. I was, like, so upset by that. But I did find them at the show, found them, made an offer, and bang. I got them all. I got the whole set. And that was great. I really, really liked that. But anyway, I enjoyed this movie immensely. It features Lon Chaney Jr., okay? And I have a couple things from Lon Chaney Jr.'s, family's website I purchased. And yes, this is a great movie. It has a very, and powerful cast to it. Claude Rains, Ralph Bellamy. There we go. I got it. Bellamy. Took me a little time there. And Bela Lugosi's in the film. It is, I want to say it's probably, yes, it's a Werewolf of London in 35. But, hey, it did do a good job. This was probably their second Werewolf movie in about 6 years. And, of course, again, the Werewolf of London in 35 did not perform that well at the box office by any means. But, of course, this film would let Chaney Jr. Reprise the role of the Wolfman for about 4 sequels, beginning with Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman in 43. Of course, we got the Wolfman reappearing in Alvin Costello's Frankenstein, which is never really the correct title for that. It should be Alvin Costello Meet the Monster, because they're not really meeting the doctor, because that's just how it goes. But I've seen they've been outvoted on this one by a lot, so oh well. A lot of people, again, thought the poem in the movie is an ancient legend. It's not. It's an invention of the screenwriter, Kurt. The poem has been pretty much repeated in just about every Talbot Werewolf Man movie, maybe with the exception, and I have to agree. We had a big argument over here. I said it was just the Alvin Costello Frankenstein, and I believe I couldn't remember. Was it House of Frankenstein, or House of Dracula? And I've since researched it. It's the House of Dracula. It's also quoted in the later film Van Helsing. A lot of films kind of change a line or two of this movie. And actually, it's also been recited in Dark Shadows, the original. So I'm not going to tell you what episode. I'll let you guys try to figure that one out. But I will give you a hint. It's in episode, it begins with a 9. All right? How about that? 3 digits, and the first number of that is a 9. You have to figure out the rest. Let's see, what else can we tell you here? They don't make a lot of use of the werewolf transforming under the full moon. It kind of just happens more when the wolfbane blooms. And that has been used through a lot of movies in different forms, good and bad. A bad one would be, say, Nero Wolf. Was that bad? I found that it's something good. It's told of a story that if you throw everything out, you could believe. We have a son returning home to see his father. His father rejected him for different reasons. He's coming back home. The father has accepted him. And in this, he seems to be a fairly, stand-up fellow, if you would. Who knew that he was going to turn into such a wolf at night and be clawing at whatever he could find? I guess you can never really judge a person by what they wear, and just have to judge them by how much, they snarl and growl. This was a really interesting. The transformation that does happen does take a long, long time, and it would really take quite a bit of time to get the whole entire thing done. It was a great movie. Still is, to my belief. It is part of the Universal Legacy Collection. It has been recently put out in a Blu-ray disc, so I would definitely recommend you getting this. This film has had phenomenal ratings its entire time. Even though it produced a lot of sequels, this has got like a 7.4 kind of rating out of it. It is a terrific movie. I definitely recommend you seeing this particular version of it. Let's move a little bit more into our more modern ones, if you would. Jumping all the way out to, say, 2002 with Dog Soldiers. Dog Soldiers is a pretty cool film, directed by Neil Marshall. I like this film. I really do. It kind of takes, instead of the werewolves always dealing with civilians, if you would, now they're dealing with military personnel, a crack kind of commando unit, which seems to be cracking under the pressures in, I think, Scotland or such. It is really good. I mean, we have a couple in the beginning. We usually have to have that, some kind of lead-in, if you would. But this is a film that really brings a lot to it in the fighting sense. And also lets the soldiers think that they are in a safe spot, but in reality, nothing around them is safe. There's all kinds of problems. But the werewolves, that's done so great. Really is. Really a wonderful aspect to their look, their walk, everything about them. And in fact, this movie, I would have to say, really contains a bit of charm of, say, a mixture of, it's going to sound crazy, but I'm going to say a mixture of the Evil Dead meets the aliens while out on safari for Zulu. Now, I know you're saying, what the hell did you just say to me? Okay, everybody knows about Evil Dead, right? That's a foregone conclusion. So you have them, the soldiers, I won't give away too much, hold up in a house in the woods, trying to keep whatever evil was outside from getting inside. Great. Of course, evil can get in wherever evil wants to. It just likes to play with you a lot. Next up is then aliens. Why do I say aliens? Well, again, here we have a combat team. So, Marines, combat. You barricade yourselves in, you barricade yourselves in. Same kind of philosophy here. You're trying to hold off your enemies for as long as you can. Now, a film called Zulu is a film where you have a small garrison of soldiers who have to fight off enormous group of a raiding party, if you would. It was set in, I want to say, in Africa, but I could be wrong. It could have been India. I don't remember that much about the movie. There are certain scenes that stand out to me. Michael Caine stands out to me in the film. That's what stands out to me. A phenomenal actor, by the way. Yes, he's made some garbage out there. Jaws 4 is probably one of the top ones, but let's move away from that. Again, small garrison, having to fight off incredible odds, having to figure out a way to defend and keep as many of your group alive. It really tries to avoid a lot of cliches that happen in the werewolf type of movies, so that is really cool. The focus is really on the soldiers. While we do get a little to the werewolves themselves, of course, we have it falling back into that aspect where you don't want to go too far down that road. I liked a lot of the special effects done to this, the animatronics. There was a little of the digital kind of effects done, but, you know, very, very minor in the long scope of the entire film. The entire thing was almost played out like a video game. You know, they're always running, they're moving, they're jumping, they're climbing, they're doing everything they can do to stay alive. And it really got a lot of, you know, good solid reviews to it. And the film has, of course, had a big Blu-ray transfer onto from Shout Factory, so that was really great, which actually worked with the director, which was really nice to do. Neil Marshall for the film, so I thought that was a nice kind of tidbit there. Yes, so again, another very good movie. If you can, I would definitely recommend seeing this one also. Like I said, on the rating scale, you could say it's got a 6.8 for it. I find it, again, to be a really good movie. I do highly recommend the film. Really, everybody, I think, in the film does a really good job and doesn't let a lot of it go too far. But, yeah, it's a good, solid film, and I do recommend it. Next up is Ginger Snaps. I know we're going backwards here a little bit with this, but this came out in 2000, a Canadian horror film directed by John Fawcett. That's F-A-W-C-E-T-T. The film focuses on two teenage sisters who have a fascination with death. And basically we get three movies in this series, if you would. The first one I say is the best, but that's normal in a series. While the budget was $4.5 million, it kind of cratered at the box office because it really had just a limited release. It doesn't get didn't have a massive release. It just played a couple film festivals and such. So while it did do that aspect, it really owned a cult following on video DVD sales and such, and thereby really led to earning its budget back and then some. There was a soundtrack that was released in Roadrunner Records, in fact, which actually is very hard to get your hands on, believe it or not. It is just something that is not that easy to find out there. A lot of people have tried to sell it off as a CDR, which is illegal, unless it's coming right from Roadrunner Records. So there have been people who have been caught doing that, and that's I don't recommend that at all. There was a lot of different things that in this film didn't work and then kind of did weirdly, if you would. Again, you're doing it low budget. You're trying to make your film be everything it can be. The two actresses that are in this film, you know, they attended the same preschool, elementary, private schools, everything. I mean, it was kind of weird. You know, they were just, you know, their lives were like a mirror of each other, and they were just about like a year apart, which really worked well for the filmmakers kind of lucking into that. But, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of great things here. I do want to mention, and there seems to be this really weird, I don't know how this ever happened, but Lucy Lawless, she only appears as voice only. She's not in the film. I don't know why people keep putting her name out there that she's in the movie. She's not in the movie. Not there. Sorry. Not happening. But yeah, it's a great film. Again, I do recommend this one also out there. If you have Prime, you can definitely get it now free, I believe. So definitely check that out. Now, I don't know if the sequels are also available. If they're not, that kind of sucks a little bit. But needless to say, it is a good movie. I don't want to give away too much on it because right now telling you your sisters, telling you they have a session with death, telling you that there's werewolves, it's already giving a lot away. So it becomes an interesting aspect. It's a good movie. I like the special effects, like I said. Again, it's a 6.8 film out of the 10. Now, this next one I want to discuss gets passed over a lot. It really does. I'm not too sure why. I really don't know all the aspects of why that movie gets, the next one I'm going to mention, gets slammed. I really don't know. The film is called Late Phases. I think I know why, but I don't want to go down that road. I am not going to go down that road. You want to think it, you can, but I am not doing that, okay? It's a 2014 American-Mexican co-production horror drama, if you would. It is directed, I can't even say the director's name, it's so long, but I'm going to take a big swing. Adrian Garcia. No, it's Boglianno. It is his first feature film in the English language. It basically stars Nick DeMisi as the blind war veteran that becomes a victim of a werewolf attack. Now, he is a blind war veteran. He has a seeing eye German Shepherd. He lives in a retirement community on the edge of a forest. He is willful, he's adamant, he is stubborn, that he can live on his own, doesn't need any help. And basically, he's not really happy with his son either. His son, he's not on good terms with them. He basically does meet some women, and they kind of like him, on his face, but his attitude is really standoffish. He just doesn't get along really easy. Stubborn, he's stuck in his ways, he's adamant, I don't need this and I don't need that. You know, if you know somebody like this who's elderly, you may know definitely what I'm talking about. I don't need a cane, I don't need glasses, I don't need a hearing aid, I don't need my medication. And then you find them on the floor a couple of days later. And you get them all well again, and then, the cycle repeats itself over and over and over. It kind of helps in this film. But yeah, the film has weirdly had some setbacks to it. I'm not too sure why. Again, I have a theory. I really do. And it's a theory that I have found listed in a lot of comments. But the InterMovie database has been good enough to get rid of those comments, if you get where I'm going with this. The comments have been coming up of recent time. They did not come out in 2014. But they've been coming up ever since, and the InterMovie database has done a great job in removing some of that. The film has got a 6.0 rating out of 10. Now, what makes the film to me really good, again, is the actors act. They get their roles well. The film really has a good script under it. That script expresses a lot of points. And, of course, the lead actor, Nick, there, who plays the blind man, did state that you can't just blind yourself to learn because it doesn't work that way. Even when you're blindfolded, you're seeing more than a blind person does. So he stated, I just had to do it without looking, at anything, just trusting that the director knew exactly what he wanted and needed. And that way the character then comes off looking the best way. Basically, they were saying the biggest challenge in the film was came to the werewolf transformation scene. That the producers knew that if it was going to work, it had to work very well. It couldn't be a halfway. If it was going to be halfway, then it was going to just fail at every level of it. And basically the producers understood this and really left the filmmaker alone. Not really wanting to see any of the productions that were going on, understanding that you have a limited budget. We understand you must show the werewolf. You have to. You can't go halfway. You have to show it. And therefore, you know, there you go. It is a very good movie. There's a lot of aspects to it. I don't want to get into it too far because I'm going to give away too much. But the character Ambrose basically has that toughness of the military veteran that, you know, they don't want to reach out for help, but is also need some help. And, you know, in a werewolf movie like this, there's a lot that goes on in it. It kind of reminds me a little of The Scent of a Woman with Pacino's character, who plays a blind man, and, you know, things that he does in the film kind of carries over to this one. So there's always a bit of interesting aspects here. But for this character, he uses, they enhance the senses. Now, what some people also comment about this movie is the fact that they say, why did they have an actor who has sight play a blind man rather than a blind actor? There's probably a couple reasons why. I'm going to speculate, not for fact, speculation only. Okay, so my speculation is that they decided that they were going to go down this road and said, okay, if you have a blind person playing the role, it's difficult to say that you have a werewolf in front of you. Okay, what is a werewolf? What does a werewolf look like? I don't know. You could have them touch whoever's playing the werewolf, yes, keep raising their hand higher and higher and higher and higher, and then finally find the teeth and go, ah, that's a werewolf that's got teeth. A lot of teeth. Sharp teeth. I like to have my hand back now. It may be difficult to, you know, do it on a scene, especially low budget. So, I think that's the primary reason that they would turn away from that. Now, I got to take a quick little break here, just a small one. I'm going to play another piece of music. How about, as we're getting ready to close out of our best horror and move into our worst horror, that we play Hard Rock Zombies Top 40 Werewolf.
Just rock and roll like a pro. Hair grease back with another girl. Hey man, let's roll up tonight. Gonna make your girl mine. Let's cruise into daddy's car. Park up a boy, yeah, look at the stars. Full moon shining bright. Come on baby, let's push it tonight. Who's wanna go study with me? Come on baby, come with me. Top
All right, that was Hard Rock Zombie with a top 40 werewolf song there. And we move right into our, how we put this nicely, our worst horror films for werewolves. And I'm telling you, there are some doozies on the list. We're going to start with the worst that we were able to locate. And it actually beats a Halloween movie. No. Wait a minute, is that possible? Yes, it is. The film is from 1995. It is on video. It's called Werewolf. So you should know. Oh, good. We have some really undesirable archaeologists trying to take advantage of an outbreak of a werewolf breakout. I am having a really difficult time saying words today. kind of an outbreak from a werewolf skeleton in the Arizona desert. This is probably the worst. It's a 1.7 out of 10. So, bang, you know where that film's going to end up for us. I've got to track it down. I have to watch it. And I'm going to put it into the DOA one day. Oh, boy, the things I do, right? Next up is The Howling, New Moon Rising, 1995 also. This is a 1.8. Boy, these two films are duking it out for the worst of the worst. A number of brutal werewolf-like slayings begin occurring in a small California town after the arrival of an unfamiliar motorcyclist. Ooh, oh, okay. Yeah, so there you go. There's two. But wait. There's more. We are going to give you the full list. That's right. There are 20 turkeys bombs on this list. These are the worst that we could figure out. Next up is Dark Wolf from 2003. This is a 2.8 out of 10. An LAPD cop whose partner was murdered by a werewolf must protect a woman called Josie, who's a hybrid. After he realizes that the werewolf wants to mate with her. Hey, listen, you shouldn't come between love, okay, officer? Your job is not to be the, you know, romance police here. I mean, if they want to, you know, shag, if you would, then they should be allowed to get their groove on. Now, if she's not interested, I mean, of course, that's where you got to step in. But, hey, she's a hybrid, you know? She goes both ways for this, I guess. I have no clue. I didn't see the movie. I have no clue what I'm saying there. Again, this is on video. The Beast of the Yellow Knight from 71. Now, this is a 3 out of 10. We move up a little bit. Satan saves Ashley from death on condition he become his disciple. And it turns out a hairy murderous beast as well. This film was a double feature back when they would do these type of movies, and would always come out with The Creature Blue Hand. So just kind of throw that out there. Now, if you wanted to watch this movie, I do believe it's available on Prime. The director is Eddie Romero. I don't know if there's any relation to the actual George one. Might be. It is, again, a very strange little movie for you to enjoy. Now, from those who enjoy Teen Wolf, we have Teen Wolf 2 with T-O-O-O-K from 87. This was a 3.3 movie, and it really should probably, you know, be there. Comedy, fantasy... It's only on the list because it's got werewolves. It's the only reason we put it on the list. Werewolves, right? That we couldn't think of another reason to put this kind of movie on here. Anyway, got Todd Howard, who's a struggling teenager. Nothing seems to be going very well for him until he turns into a wolf. Now, Todd here is somehow related to the Michael J. Fox character, and thereby, bang, you get that. The Howling 3 then falls onto the list in 87 with a 3.3. Here we've got a female werewolf runs away from her family, falls in love with a man who works in the movie business. While a sociologist who studies these creatures is looking for proof of their existence. Okay. This movie is available on Prime. Moving right along, we go into Blood of the Werewolf in 2001. And we have obviously ranked this by rating level, if you would. Makes it more fun. We have a 3.3. Three stories of werewolves in the early 21st century. A blood reunion, a horror writer returns to his hometown and finds a secret he could not have guessed as a child. I don't really need to go through the other two stories because they don't get any better. So the artwork on the cover of this thing, I swear that someone saw Cats and decided to paint one of the characters like Cats. The Broadway musical, that is. All right, moving into 2005, here comes The Beast of Briar Road, based on actual accounts of a werewolf sightings in Wisconsin. The film follows a local sheriff who is finally forced to accept a string of horrifying deaths that are linked together. So, what do we get there? So we got, you know, we get another one of weirdness, if you would. But hey, it's got a 3.8, so we're moving up a little bit. Next one is a really interesting film to try to find. It's always been difficult. Not that you should really be looking for it. You probably wouldn't even know about it until I read about it here. The Huntress, Spirit of the Night from 1985. This is a 3.8. A present-day erotic horror about an aristocratic woman who inherits her family castle and along with it a werewolf curse. Great. Talk about having problems shaving. Now you got to have bigger problems trying to just, you know, get through certain dinner times. Anyway, the tagline for the film is Primal Hunger. Ooh. How nice. All right. Coming from, I guess the best way to say this, the B-movie world even further down there is Eyes of the Werewolf from 1999. This is a 3.9 out of 10. This comes from a director named Jeff Leroy. Now, that should sound familiar to you because he's going to be on our list in another place. He is definitely going to be there. He makes a lot of what I call a TNA movie. I mean, that, I think, is the best way to actually kind of put that down. I don't think there's any other way to fully understand what he does. It's a lot of TNA. It's a lot of B-movie reel for him. Next up, then, again, there's really nothing on that plot. There's not a thing written on the plot, so I can't even tell you what the movie's about, even though I wouldn't want to. In 1970, hitting our 4 range, that means everything from a 4 going up, we've got Assignment Terror. This one, basically we have aliens and werewolves. If that makes any sense to you, good luck. Next up is The Rage of the Werewolf. This came out in 99, it's a 4.2. Again, we have a werewolf on the run from authorities in a post-apocalyptic New York City. He must make his way past police, past the helicopters, past the subterranean mutants, I guess from Chud, I don't know, bounty hunters, and even a spy. Debbie Rochan is in this film. It's maybe the only thing you want to know about that. The director's Kevin J. Pierrot Lindenmuth, who's done a lot of B-movie out there, so you should be aware of that one. Coming in with a Italian horror, if you would, is Monster Dog from 84. The rock star returns to his childhood home to shoot a music video while a pack of wild dogs are on the loose, killing off the local residents. This movie stars Alice Cooper, believe it or not. Another so-so movie is Skinwalkers. A 12-year-old boy and his mother become the targets of 2 warring werewolf packs. That's all you need to know. Nothing more. I saw the movie. If you didn't, you didn't miss much. You didn't. I mean, it's a fair movie. We're getting to the fair department, if you would. Next then is Project Metal Beast. Basically, we now get more into the spy network of using werewolf blood he found. We get other movies that come along as Cry, Never Cry Werewolf. We get Curses on the list. That was from S.R. Wes Craven. Of course, there's The American Werewolf in Paris. Now we get a 5.1, and rounding it out is Blood and Chocolate, which is a teenage werewolf is torn between honoring his family secret and the love for a man. Wow. Not the greatest stuff in the world. Now, not making that top 20 list of worst. Amazingly, we did skip over Werewolf in a Woman's Prison. This is a film from Jeff Leroy. It starred Victoria D. Meir. Yes, I reviewed this movie on the Horror Times. Just something I did out there. Why? I saw it a long time ago at a film fest and decided, why not? Let's review this film. Victoria D. Meir has been in some films lately. It seemed like a good thought. The director's making some movies again. So, you know, Victoria D. Meir has got about, I want to say about 10 movies either in post-production or pre-production mode. So she's got a lot of things going on for her. So that's pretty cool if you want to go down that road. She was in Hell's Kitty, another film I did a review of. Yeah, I mean, look, the guy does do a lot of TNA type of films. So if you're into that, you're definitely going to go down his page and pick out whatever you can find and watch that. Some of it is available on Prime, believe it or not. So, you know, you could take an interesting moment with that. And really, that kind of summarizes a lot of the. Okay, that's interesting. We've got a call waiting. That's nice. That was that beep about. Okay, that was weird again. I love when my phone makes these goofy sounds when you're trying to do a show. Beep, boop, bop, bang. Yeah, it's great. I love it. All right. And that really wraps up the show. I mean, that's pretty much our topic for werewolves. I know it was a short one. I know we probably didn't get into a lot of aspects, but we're just rolling this out. We're trying something new. In a week or two, we'll pick another topic. Not going to tell you what it is. Keep that a secret. And we'll see how that goes. Maybe we'll get into some other aspects that could be interesting for a lot of people. However, I do want to play a piece of music here. For everybody, this particular track that we're going to play is in reference to a show that we have coming up next Wednesday, not this Wednesday. This Wednesday around, I think it's 10 o'clock or so at night, is our Horror Times, Unleashing Horrors. We'll be talking about both new releases and upcoming releases, some that are not even on your schedule. On Tuesday and Thursday of this week, we got on Tuesday, Shadow Metal Beast. It's going to be a kind of a birthday show since my birthday comes up on Thursday. On Thursday is the Sinister Death Show with, of course, a lot of bands that I really, really like, which was really hard to narrow that down from 1,000 that we'll be playing. On Saturday, very early in the morning, by the way, we're playing Mysterious Void, so be aware of that. Sunday, we've got Hard Rock Madness coming up for that show, so that'll be pretty cool. Next Monday night, again, it is going to be Screaming Horror with Werewolves versus Vampires. Then we make our turn back around there onto Tuesday with Shredding Metal Beast once again. Our Wednesday has the premiere show. Premiere show next Wednesday, the 29th, called Synth Pathways. We'll be playing synth music that falls into dark wave, horror wave, into that kind of aspect of the synth music. I mean, there's a lot out there, let me tell you. And it's really popular nowadays. But we're going to start to kind of stick to one kind of area of it, if you would. And I think that'll do really well for us here. We've been working on this for many months. Many, many months. We wanted to make sure we had enough music to sustain the show. Maybe playing it every other month, if you would. We're going to see how that goes. We may play it every month. It depends on the feedback we get. But that show, we don't have our scheduled time for that one yet. Thursday, there might be a Sinister Death show. It depends, because we're trying to publish the Horror Times on time this month. That's our goal. I know it's really hard. We don't seem to do that well here. And then on Friday the 31st, we do have the Baron's Crypt show coming back once again. So, yeah, you get two more Baron Crypt shows this month, plus a whole bunch of other things going on. A lot happening. So, the track we're going to play right now is a little taste of what you could expect on the Synth Pathway show. It's from a band called Neuron Spectre. This comes from a label called Retro Synth. Retro Synth Records. Excuse me. You can find that on Facebook and also on Bandcamp. This track is called Blood Moon. It's about 4 minutes long. It is going to be our closeout track for the show. Again, we are ending early. I have a meeting to get to, so I have to prepare for that. And I can't run the full show and do the. I can't. It's impossible. I will run out of time and be rushing to do something, and that's never good. You know that in horror movies. Everybody starts running around like mad little hatters. Everybody doesn't make it to the sequel afterwards. They just don't. They're just running around and not thinking about things. So, again, this is Neuron Spectre from Retro Synth Records. So, enjoy the track. It's called Blood Moon.